Greetings, comrades, and welcome to the Eastern Border. In this news episode, well, we're going to have a bit of an insight of what NATO says about this whole matter. A colleague of mine talked to them, and with some condition of anonymity, he got some info from NATO people. NATO considers that from 7,000 to 15,000 Russian troops have been likely killed in Ukraine, which is per their official briefing data. And those total losses, including wounded, captured, or missing, could be in the 30,000 to 40,000 range. They base everything that they have on intel coming from Ukraine and observations, which, by the way, NATO numbers are, well, way higher than the very confirmed ones that Narashna opposition journalists, who are super, super careful and only count the very totally confirmed things, they publish, but it sounds realistic. And this is weird. They commented that this whole fighting there in Russia has gone almost to a stalemate. Almost. Quote, I don't know if you can go as far as to say stalemate, but it's clear that after a month, Russia has achieved almost none of their strategic objectives. They are achieving more results in the south, but the price of it is absolutely horrendous. What they do is World War II, 70-year-old techniques. They are carpet-bombing the city, Mariupol, that is, as per another NATO official. To reach this extreme, you need to be cornered and you need to be pushed to break all moral human rules to go to such brutality. Literal carpet-bombing. And there are fears that Putin could turn to weapons of mass destruction and even target NATO, and those are really real fears among NATO people. And again, this NATO official stated, he's dangerous. Putin and his close circle, they are absolutely reckless people. They don't care at all about human life. Putin has a deep hatred of our society, our values. The alliance is absolutely at risk. And we got warnings that Putin could launch direct attack on NATO due to miscalculation, precise words. Something that Russia has done a lot in Ukraine. And there's also, of course, the potential of horrendous mistakes. One of these risks is the fact that Sergei Lavrov, one of my favorite propagandists, or Russia's foreign minister, stated that if United Nations or NATO send peacekeepers to Ukraine, that could lead to direct conflict between Russia and NATO. He said this when he was talking in the Moscow International Relationships Institute. Which is funny, because I believe that Moscow's International Relationships Institute is probably going to be the lowest rankings of among all higher education facilities on the planet Earth after this situation. I mean, it's kind of funny, but he stated, quote, our Polish colleagues have declared that there will be a NATO summit and that peacekeepers should be sent in. I hope they understand what they are talking about. This is going to be that one direct Russia and NATO's conflict, out of whom not only everyone wanted to avoid, but stated that this should never happen in principle. So, you know, that's happening at all times, and I still believe in the odd chance that because of the circumstances that I mentioned in the last episode, that Putin might actually drop a nuke or something. A small one somewhere, and that could possibly hurt NATO borders. I'm very, very careful and cynical about this situation, because Putin is going to try to pull off anything and everything he can to get out of this war. And this is weird. But we still already see people fleeing the ship. For one, Anatoly Chubais has stepped down and left the country, citing his opposition to Vladimir Putin's war in Ukraine. Chubais was basically the guy who did the whole privatization thing in 90s Russia. He was one of those economic reformers who afterwards even remained in Putin's government and had maintained close ties with Western officials as well. He was, you know, he was constantly called a liberal fascist, because everyone's a fascist in Russian news media, but he was an advisor and he's the first, like, really high-profile person to run away. He has been apparently also seen today with his wife, and they carried out... He was seen in Turkey, in Istanbul, and they had apparently taken out $20,000 from in cash from Russia, which is the maximum legal amount they can take out. But my sources state that they also, after that, went to an ATM and cashed out all their Bitcoin, because they apparently had you know, stopped their money in Bitcoin, and they've taken out their cash out of this way. And there are rumors that he might join the opposition circles abroad. That's an interesting development. That's one of the weird things that I hadn't even thought about, that Chubais, as irrelevant as he is, still means something. About stiff resistance, mind you. Interestingly enough, is that next to Kherson, there is a small village called Chornobayevka. And it's reaching memetic status right now because of its location and because of what's been done there. See, Chornobayevka is a small village, and no one had heard about it. And most Ukrainians even hadn't heard about it. But it got famous on the internet already in the 27th of February, when Ukrainian army basically smashed the kind of the paratroops and the air forces that that basically tried to land there. And then, you know, we were just happy about this. However, on the 7th of March, they again destroyed about 30 helicopters. And after that, the stuff that they managed to drop once again, yeah, they blew it up for the third time. And then there was a weird tendency. On the 16th of March, the fourth time when Ukrainians smashed Russian helicopters there and kind of, you know, people attempting to land there just popped out. And currently that amount has reached like 7 times. 7 times they've tried to land there and drop out troops. 7 times they've been smashed. And Russian internet is now exploding with memes about the whole situation because, hey, they just keep coming there. But Zelensky had sent his advisor, Alexei Aristovich, which basically explained why the Russians are so constantly dropping forces there and getting blown up. Because, well, at the very beginning, the Russians tried to move large forces from Crimea further to the Ukrainian south to move to Kherson, Mykolaiv, and Odessa. They weren't really considering that it's very difficult to move in this region. Meanwhile, they wanted to place this group of helicopters in the airfield of Chornobayevka. But, you know, it's only in the movies when a chopper can, you know, fly and land where it wants. You need some topographical connections and an airfield. Therefore, they are forced to try to use this airfield. And there is a certain kind of a transportation point there that's very important for them, and they just keep flying. So this is kind of crazy. However, at this point, on the 23rd of March, New York Times, by the way, reported via their Ukrainian sources that Russians had already, you know, started to move away from Chornobayevk, so that could be interesting. And again, we talk about these kind of failures of Russian military, but still, this also increases my fears of a small tactical nuke being dropped somewhere. Since even Dmitry Peskov stated that Russia hasn't achieved its goals, and when asked about, you know, whether or not he could calm the world about actually stating that Russia wouldn't drop nukes, he didn't do that. So think of it as what you will, because that is a scary reality that I don't want to live in. One thing, though, is that I posted this on Twitter, and I posted this on Facebook as well, and I want to talk about this claim from NATO that Putin hates Western society. And I agree to this, and I've been talking about this, but in short form, so that you can explain to your friends and everyone. This is a bit of my specialty, since, well, political philosophy is one of the things that I spent a lot of time in university, you know, with my other philosophy degree as well. And the perspective of Putin and his motivations is just the fact that Putin simply does not believe in elections. He, if you listen to the show, you know this, but he has participated in exactly zero debates in his life. And the only honest elections where he was part of the team, where he was, you know, part of the team that ran, he lost. And those elections were when he tried to get the mayor of St. Petersburg, Sobchak, re-elected. But Sobchak lost to his deputy, or aide, I don't know. Zemestichel in Russian, it's kind of just one step below him. I guess it's a deputy. See, Putin honestly believes that there are no honest elections anywhere. That democracy globally, everywhere, is a complete scam. And you might say what you want about your electoral systems, but I'm pretty sure people in Norway get to choose, and people in Denmark and everywhere, you know. I mean, there are cases of election fraud, but they get publicized, and it's not considered normal. However, he honestly believes that in the West, elections are just as fraudulent as in Russia. And I know that some people will just agree that, oh yeah, we have election fraud too, but think about it. He believes that it's to this level that, I don't know, say, Dutch teachers stuff ballot boxes, and United States politicians drive around their retired people to falsify votes, just like in Russia, where they're just taken around in buses. And, well, that this is all done super crudely. He does not believe in any actual voting or any voice of the people. He just thinks that the West are better at falsifying and are absolute hypocrites for accusing him of falsification. He does not understand that it's a legitimate criticism. He does not understand that, yeah, you know, we actually do have some freedom of press and that, for the most part, elections do represent the will of the people. Putin's governors and elected officials will just one day praise the Orthodox Church, the other put Stalin's portraits on the wall. They have no legitimacy, they've just been placed there. And they don't care whom they serve, as long as they can rule over the serfs and steal as much as possible. Putin literally counted on people greeting the army with flowers, and he had the same perspective of the Ukrainian governors, who would just then switch sides, just like his would. You know, because they would obviously join Russia, but we'll allow them to steal more, they can just switch places. This is going to be our administration, who cares? And, you know, smart Ukrainian person obviously knew that then they would be disposed of. Disposed of in the same way that happened to literally all the Ukrainian folks who in any way or form supported the annexation of Crimea. Currently, they have been all put under repressions, pushed aside from politics, or some are even in prison. Literally, everyone who was sitting there in Crimea and being the useful fool of Putin, including the business owners and everyone, they're all suffering right now. So Putin just disposes of these people. One thing, though, is that, he expected this. And the problem is that mayors of Kharkiv, Kherson, and other places, those people who run these things, even Mariupol, everywhere, they've won honest elections. They have a mandate of their people. And Ukrainian people just won't let them do as the Russian state are doing. The people are demanding that they defend things, and this is the one occasion where, yeah, Putin thought, basically, the democracy is something nobody believes in, and that's a joke. And he was mistaken, because he lives in this completely different cultural sphere. This again shows that, you know, I have my own squabbles about the election processes and everything, but, you know, when a person actually gets to elect someone else, then they'll fight for their choices too, which is at least a bonus. But yeah, this misunderstanding of Putin, of how the West works in general, everything, I think that's one of the reasons why Putin holds such a deep grudge and hatred. Because, hey, if you want to know why he hates us, and if he hates us, and if I'm using too strong words here, no, just check his speeches. That's all in open. The one thing is that, like I mentioned on Daryl's show, that Putin speaks in two tongues. One is the polite Western diplomatic speech, where he tries to lie as much as possible. And the other one is for his Russian audiences. And his Russian audiences already know that the West is evil. We are all Nazis and terrible, terrible people. And, you know, it's not like we here in the Baltics specifically hate Russia. It's just that we have been listening to what they've been saying, and we believe them. Just like my mentor of journalism, Alexander Nevzorov, stated. Nevzorov, mind you, by the way, he's now persecuted in Russia, but he's in Israel currently since they started a criminal investigation about him, since he had been spreading fakes, which is, well, a badge of honor these days, I suppose. But yeah, working on stuff, gonna keep reporting, have to get my house in order a bit. Anyway, I hope that this episode of the news finds you well. Please support the show if you can clicking on the donate button at theeasternborder.lv or become our patron at patreon.com/theeasternborder. Donate to Ukrainian charities. Happiness is mandatory. До свидания, товарищи.